Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the American Leader Show. This is your host, Kevin White. Let me do the promo real quick and station ID.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Right, 347-637-3942, the American Legion Show, Blog Talk Radio. Also simulcast on Facebook and my public figure on Facebook, Kevin L. White. Welcome to tonight's show. Very interesting. I know people have been watching what's going on with the immigrants, not really immigrants, the migrants, whatever you want to call them, over the border, and there's no room to put them anywhere in New York, so I'm going to play this little clip just to, let's see here, let me put that in the studio, so we go back to here. So we want to play this, we're going to add this to the stream, and we're going to go over here, and hopefully it won't go to an ad. Here we go, let's watch this. I should take notes. Go ahead. Kathy Grindstone, how are you doing? Okay, I hear you. Okay. Awesome. No. Oh, you got to see this. I have several questions. I don't know if you've seen this or not, this article, or this plan from the mayor of New York City. Have you seen what he's proposing? I know that there's a bunch of them in a $700 a night room luxury hotel. They're booked up there. There's nowhere to put them right now, so they don't really have any choice, but they want to put them in gyms and schools and they wanted to put them in churches. There's no room to put anybody anywhere, and some are still on the streets. So the solution is to put them in your houses, like you said, for $125 a night, which is $500 a month. Let me ask you a question. You have no idea where these people are from. You can't talk to them. You don't know what they're up to. And you have to be safe these days. Would you accept that for $500?
It's definitely
a $125. $125. So it's $500 a month. And it probably might end on the first night. You never know. Oh, I haven't heard that. Right. Yeah, it's random people from another country, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It's just that you don't know who these people are, and there's a lot of MS-13 gangs and shady people. I heard that today. Somebody from that border killed a woman recently, like as of yesterday, in Maryland. Because they're not really looking. They're not vetting these people. But they're getting in. I'm not sure. Yeah, right. Hey, can you turn your mic up a little bit? Okay. Or bring it closer? Yeah, that might work. Okay, or you can just talk a little louder. That'd be fine. I think he put himself in a box with the Sanctuary City. I think that's what it is, and he doesn't like it. He was complaining about it, but he's going along with the program because they're already there. So. Right, and so then you talk about like the parents and the school cafeteria, the gyms. And they rejected that right away. They're like, no way, not around my kids, and not in my town. So there's some towns and exclusive cities. Guess what? It's not going to have any kids or any migrants in it. All with the money, whoever's got the money, like Martin's Vineyard and all those other, they will not see migrant kids. The elite won't, but they're going to put them in your apartments and in your colleges. And I mean, they're looking for rooms. There's just people out everywhere. So this is like the worst bad idea ever. We don't even know. We have no idea. So there's no solution for this. Imagine. So this is my speculation. They're going to be in every state. They're going to be Indiana, Michigan, Ohio. They're going to be everywhere. They're going to bus them. Because they got buses, they're going to bus them to different places. Yep. We're going to see. Yeah, right.
And even if you're even when I go into Walmart, I do have a big bar for like, you know, you can go out with somebody you know when you go up there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you hear a lot of people And at least from what I believe, you seem to be kind of in the unit.
I agree with you there. I think the only here's what I'm thinking is going on. You've got all these people in New York City, but they didn't stop there. There's more people crossing, Pretty soon, South America is going to be the place to be. You know, they're going to come across the border, and then they'll never end this problem. I think this is going to drain everybody's resources. It's going to stop a lot of progress. And where are you going to house the people? Who's going to be gone? You know. And some of them are getting paid, you know, decent money. That's our money. It's just to me, it's the same as sending to Ukraine. This is my opinion. But anyway, I think this is a serious problem that I don't know how they're going to address. Think about next year. What's it going to be like next year? I mean, it's going to be crazy. So what's your thoughts on that? Right. Yeah. Absolutely. This is like it's going to be compounded, you're saying, by the time if he does get in, it will be super compounded. I don't know what he do or what kind of plan there would be. However, we have a lot of open land, but the problem is this is going to turn into somebody else's country eventually, the more you do this. And, you know, we're cutting people off as far as birth. You know, birth rates and everything, and that's not the case. So in 20 years, who knows what this country is going to be like, what the culture is going to be. It's the same thing in the Southwest, Texas, Arizona. It's just like predominant. It's getting, you know, the culture. I love the Hispanic culture. I sure do. And the food and everything. We're used to that, but we're not used to it like in the North and every. I mean, they're flying them. Busing them just to get, it's like they're trying to get rid of them. They can't do anything. Just throw them all in, you know, you're at the border, you got to get rid of them because there's too many people down there. So all those people are going to know. Yes.
But they all are very fearful.
Yeah.
I don't like the way things are. Sure.
And to be honest, if I lived down there, I'd probably be trying to cross the border too. But because the way something, I mean, how bad is it down there? I mean, you've seen, I've been down in down South America, and it's horrific. Some of the things, it depends on where you go. The police are not your friend more than they're not in the U.S. And yes. Yeah, you're right. And you have somehow the dictator wins, and you know how the dictators don't have any rules. They don't care. Or they might say, yeah, we won, but you don't know the results. And that's happening here, too. This is turning into a dictatorship where you can't say, you know, the wrong things as far as somebody's gender or somebody's beliefs, but your own health beliefs, unless you go by the, you know, what Fishbowl is teaching you, then your question, just like, do you see those kids, that choir that was in D.C. A few days ago? I think it was Starts on a Banner, and they got, yeah, the D.C. police stopped them. They warned them, and what kind of, so I do know, this is my little theory. In D.C., the D.C. government is not even part of the U.S. That's how they can act like dictators. That's why the police can hold the J6ers and things like that. They're not the same. They're not U.S. They have a lot of Africans running the prison and everything. So it's kind of weird, a little cut out. But that's what we're doing now. We're doing the same thing that we did, dictators in South America and all over the world. That's what we're doing. We're supporting Ukraine, which is not the U.S. It's not part of NATO. It's a dangerous game, no matter how you slice it. China and Russia, really? You're going to go against them? So, yeah, I have a problem with that, but there's nothing we can do because they're being controlled by people who are bought off the top, probably. I mean, that's how it is. Warmongers make billions, right? Yeah, they're, what do they call those, the war industrial complex, is what it is. So you know who they are because they're always saying, we got to go to war, we got to go to war, we got to do this, because they have something to benefit from. They're going to make a lot of money. But if we get back to good old USA, community, backyard, baseball, hot dogs and apple pie, you know what's going to say that, right? Yes. Right. Exactly. Yeah, right, because, I mean, we used to go to the football games every Friday night, and we'll go to the baseball, not a pro team, we have a sub team. Cincinnati, I went to a Cincinnati game, the stadium is gigantic.
Double A,
it's a Cincinnati farm team, but I've been to the Cincinnati stadium, it is huge. It's right on the river. It's pretty cool. But those are things that we like to do, the pastime we like. And that's our culture. That's our American culture. Like I said, baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie and Chevrolet. That's all about America. That's the auto industry included in there and what we like. And that's, like they say, like the one show I listen to is like, and we're defending the American way. So. That's what we want to do. That's what we want to be Americans. We don't want to be – I love all the other cultures. I've lived overseas for 3 years, but this is the wrong way to do it. I love influences from all over the world, not just – and there's Chinese people coming through the border. There's people from the Middle East. That's scarier than anything else, and that's what I'm really worried about.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are strategic border crossers for a reason, and they're coming up. They're trying to get everything intel on us, and but you know they already got the balloon over, right? So they know where to go. Yes. Oh, yeah. No. Right, because I'm not really trying to get political or anything, but I mean, this is not political because Hunter Biden is not, you know, in office. But the stuff that they've uncovered as of a few weeks ago and even last night, it's very scary to where top secret documents classified. It doesn't really matter. You should have those if you're not the president getting out. But you know they keep throwing everything in the other direction. Well, I'll tell you, if I had one, I'd be in jail. One. If I had one email, I'd be somewhere trying to explain. So, but okay.
James Comer is in a meeting.
Uh huh.
With James Rapp.
Yes.
The same meeting, like moments after they leave the room, he's rescued in front of the camera. Saying that's total BS.
Yeah.
Did you not hear the same meeting out?
Yeah, you're right. He lied.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's okay. I mean, some people, yeah, that's what they do. I mean, they can't they get, do anything different. Whatever protects them, because I think it's like a religion for some people. And
yeah.
They believe that.
Politicians in general, would never want to be, years ago, if they would ask me that, maybe politicians try to have. But tell you what, we were down at the state capitol here in Minnesota years ago, and we were just watching testimony for my question. questions you want to bring up. And the people on the committee, you know, I watch all their thinking. I have just witnessed, you know, I felt so dirty. I don't know.
Yeah.
Why. It just seemed like the people working in there, walking around, it was, I don't think it was ever meant to be this way. As far as politics go. When the founding fathers gathered to support the government, and I know a lot of them back then, he was probably, you know, continued on down the trail or something. But when their time was up in Washington,
yeah,
they didn't want to sleep, you know, they went back to the farm. But we did something else.
That's, well, right, I think they only did 3 days in December at one point. You left your plow, went to Washington, you left your plow, and then you were part of the militia. So that's very striking because the plow represents you do your own thing, then you serve, then you do your own thing, because that's what it's all about. But now it's like full-time careers. People have been there for 30, 40 years. People are dying in there. You know, you got people so old, they can't even talk. They can't even, they don't know what's going on. But it's the power. Yeah, right, right. The power of Fetterman and all these people. And, you know, whenever I see like a video and I see people that have said, well, we did this 30 years ago. I remember doing this. You shouldn't remember anything. This is the people you represent, your states, and the way it was supposed to work. Senate is supposed to have people that go to their states and ask what the state should vote. They don't vote on their own because this is long gone. The Senate is supposed to vote according to the state. The congressmen, it's just a power play. That's what it is. They go there and become millionaires. Then they never want to leave. But a lot of them are threatened, and, you know, if you don't vote, because I have no idea what they did to Joe Manchin. Or, you know, we don't know. But I understand through interviews that they do threaten people. And they will see, because they'll let it go, and they're like, we're going to work on them. But, you know, behind the scenes, oh, man, they're just doing all kinds of things. But personally, I'd be like, I'm not a junior senator. Guess what? I represent the state of Ohio. I'm here for my people. How far will that go? Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No matter what.
Right.
But this is a popularity contest in our state.
Hakeem? Jeffries? Is that yours? Is he from your...
Hakeem Jeffries is from...
Okay. Okay, great. Right.
But, you know, even when we had, like, Dave Dernberger, he was the biggest rival that, you know, ever lived. I got a local farm nearby to get our beef and pork truck. And he ran, Minnesota Senator, U.S. Senator. And he ran as a Democrat, and he said he was being endorsed by two Republicans, Phil Republican, Ronnie Policy, and Dave Rubin. And he was really excited about that. He put it on Facebook, but I had to remind him. I said, you know, these guys aren't exactly your rock-risk conservatives, you know, of the Republican Party. I mean, I don't want to rain on your parade, but, you know, and he just, he was, a, you know, he understood what I was, where I was coming from and kind of called it all out. I think I got the little energy for that.
Okay. Yeah, we have J.D. Vance here.
Great guy.
And Senator Sherrod Brown. Right, right. And Congressman, mostly ours. Who's in our state. But,
well, there again, in Minnesota, what we call Greater Minnesota, which is all states or whatever, we've got a lot of Republicans.
Right.
Wherever the tallest
buildings are. Yeah. Right. So let's talk about, as a truck driver, you still drive, right?
Well, I've been retired now for, well, let's see, I retired when I'm 62 and I'm 66. Yes.
4 years? Okay.
And I, for 1 year after I retired, I still kind of tried to do part-time. My company really was set up to utilize a part-time driver very well. So I thought, you know what, that's great concept, but no matter. I still stay in contact with a lot of drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Social media. Digital life, which is a lot of so I know that, you know, there's been quite a bit of a change as far as road availability. And of course, guys who are on operators, that was to see if they're good next time. The needs were a little bit higher.
So tell me, what's the consensus, fellow truck drivers, you know, about the, is the price of fuel, two questions, price of fuel, is it really, did it go crazy and does that hurt your business? Is it harder?
Well, yeah, more center operators are good.
Okay.
So the price starts to go around four or five bucks.
Yeah. So let me ask you something. It's kind of an off the wall question. So, what do you think of these pesky little car drivers? What do you mean, trucker?
Well, our trucks are
drivers. Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
A lot of companies do that. And as far as we call the horses, you know, they drive, not all bad. Some of them have a concept of business. Because, you know, when you pull in front of a driver, you start brake checking. We can definitely use it.
Right.
I remember once going through the Illinois tollway in pretty good success. And the Woodland Trek, that was still my time for the 4-wheeler. And I was going towards Wisconsin. So I was on the westbound lane. There was another westbound driver, and he was going westbound. And he was in the eastbound lane.
Mm-hmm.
We had a choosing barrier between us. So I got on the TV and I was totally emotional.
Yeah, that happens. Interesting is that I've seen in other countries the big trucks, they carry like probably 3-foot slabs by 50 foot or whatever on the back. There's nothing holding up behind, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
Especially
when
we're
driving into places, you know, like Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, you know, it's really hard to get through.
Yeah. And what I thought was very interesting was when I was there in Turkey, I've been there 6 times, you go downtown, and there's Roman bridges that can still drive everything over. And they're completely intact, which I think is interesting. And you can see the design, and there's Roman roads everywhere. But that's the only bridge. They've never built another bridge. But that's how good the Romans were. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a different paradigm. You know, we might see things like that in this country develop. Like, they have, like, fans and stick shifts. The shifter is right here where you are, but it goes backwards behind them. You know, it's kind of weird. Yeah. Not to be confused with ape hangers, okay?
Yeah.
Now, that's America right there.
Yeah.
I love that kind of stuff. You know, I this is the kind of thing. I grew up in the, as a kid in the 60s, 65, 70, grew up in the 70s, and some of the things I saw that I don't see anymore, quarter for a candy bar, quarter for a soda, and every kid was outside. There was nothing inside to keep us. There's nothing there. There's three channels, four channels at the most. Right, played baseball, whatever, basketball, we're outside. And we get to know our neighbors. We don't know our neighbors like we used to, and at least not in my town. I know my neighbors, but I don't know them. Once we get 2 houses down, it's all over, right?
Yeah,
we did that too. We were always outside. They had to find us. They had to call us. Imagination.
Yeah. Used to play ball in the street.
Yeah. Yeah, and back then and before that, people didn't really care. They didn't watch their kids close, and you know they weren't. It's like dangerous things. We had dangerous things. It's like back in the 40s and 30s, you see what you know the playground looked like. Very dangerous. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Oh my goodness. Yeah, those are the this is good old days where it got too hot to get on the slide, but you did it anyway, right? Yeah. A lot of fighters, so F-16s, A7s, F15s. I even worked on an F111 once. Worked on a Thunderbird, A10, different planes like that. Back when you're allowed to work on other platforms, they don't do that anymore. C-130s, helicopters. Then I worked for an airline doing engineering stuff. So, yeah, that right there would probably that probably would have crashed. Because how do you get that? You're coming down and then no, you're not going to do that. No, because yeah. you have no flight. You are not flying at that point. You are not flying anymore. So you don't have the stress and the lift. You just that thing's going to crash or it's going to stall. Because the engines are not getting any air in the intakes. They're just coasting. So you'll start the engine, but go into a stall. And you probably won't have much control. To be able to do that, to go up like that and then come back down, you probably just don't, probably just hit the aircraft carrier. So,
yeah.
1965. But I was a military brat, so I saw a lot of things. But, you know, bases are around, you know, they're pretty much what they call white trash neighborhoods. It's trashy neighborhoods. Outside of the bases aren't the best places, right? But that's the kind of, I have friends there and everything, and everybody got along. Everybody's goals to have fun. We didn't have, nobody had identity crisis. They knew who they were. If there was, they wouldn't say anything to anybody. So, and it wasn't even important. So it has nothing to do with me or you or anybody else. It just went out to have fun. I know we had people that were offended, but they never said anything or never, you know, or they never went out. The guys didn't go out for the girls' teams, which obviously that alone. So, and that's discrimination against the females. And they're fighting back now. They're not taking it anymore, you know, because it's not fair. It's not fair.
No, but, it's really not.
Yeah, right.
Because it's happening all over the country. I mean, as a guy, growing up, it was like, okay, I stopped that happening. So I was okay with the girls.
Yeah.
So, like, really good at that. If I had a friend who decided to do it up, I'd say, come on, let me do it. And then give them my, you know. People are actually,
right, because if you think about it, who in their right mind would that be a solution for? How bad, how desperate do you have to be? You're not even transitioning, you're just still a guy. And I think it's very disturbing. Right. Right. So, by golly, he's number one now. Right. Right. And it proves that the girls can't compete with those guys. I'm sure there's some guys that are losing to the girls, but you don't see that though.
Even though I like to play
out. Yeah. Right, right. Yeah.
I had a group way down the Sea Island, about 15 guys. Probably one of my top 4 players.
Right.
And she eventually went on to become an Olympic student.
Whoa.
She was like one of the skaters when she was going on. And the quick handling and everything was very nice. It's kind of all good. You really can't do a good quick handling unless you're capable.
Yeah. That's awesome, though. It doesn't matter. She made it to the big game.
Yeah, especially my daughter, who had quite a few high school defensive tackles.
Yeah. When I was in Ohio State, everybody hits Ohio State. I know. So, all right, good luck to Minnesota this year, Big Ten.
I like Ohio.
Yes.
I'm not a really big fan of that
Harbaugh
coach.
Yeah, No. Yeah. I don't know. There's rumors of it. I don't know if he did or not. Yeah. Right. That's where he wants to go next. He wants to go there next. I think he wants to go pro. I don't like the guy. I don't like any. Yeah, you know, I went to Ohio State. I was there. I can't remember what his name is, Carter. I mean, we saw all the, back in the 80s, you know, we saw everybody. You know, we saw him on the bus. Chris Carter, yeah. We saw the what we used to call the big dumb linemen, took all the dumb, big dumb classes and majors. Back then, the players were not smart. They used to go on probation, you know, and all that, academic punishment. They'd actually take them off the team. That would happen. They're being honest back then. Now the kids are a lot smarter. And I did a one quarter of marching band, which is fantastic. It was unreal. The complexity of what we did and everything like that. And it was crazy. But I'm not the kind of person who bleeds Ohio State. So, I mean, I've lived it. I've been there. I ran into Earl Bruce one time. You know, they're just part of the campus, right? A lot of people don't even know who they are. But they worked, they're hardened as athletes because we had people that would be on the basketball team. I knew a couple of basketball players, and they would go on this 5-day shootout somewhere, come back, and the professor would say, "You're late. Where's your homework? I'll give you an F." They didn't care if you're on the team or not at that time. And these professors were actually – they're from Ivy League schools working at Ohio State. When it became the Ohio State University while I was there, that's when they started upping the academics. And they had, everything, that's what changed. That's what I was there when it happened. Next thing you know, it's the Ohio State University.
Right.
That's what that was all about. Yes, right. Chris Carter was cool, though. I mean, he's a cool guy. Well, we didn't know what's going on. I was like, why is it tough? It's not a hard thing. Because when I got in, all you had to have was a neck to get in the university. There was, like, no standards. I went there on a full military scholarship, which is so cool. I go right up to the towers, and I one of the towers, and they give me, I go straight up to the, no line. Everybody else has these long lines. You're right up. There's only, like, five people in line. So I was kind of privileged when I went there. I didn't pay a dime, so it was pretty awesome. But I could, a lot of things I couldn't do. I couldn't be in the full-time marching band. Why? Because I had to do drill weekends, and the games are on the weekends. But it was a fantastic opportunity. I wore that uniform. I was surprised I got in. So I played trumpet. I didn't play trumpet in high school. I play guitar, bass, things like that, but. Yeah, I don't play trumpet anymore.
Okay, but
I like to do that for a hobby, and I actually play at my church too, play guitar, bass, and I fill in there. So I learn a lot. There's a lot of learning. You know, you never ever learn everything. But it's something. It's kind of like working on the car. You know, on the Mercedes. It, we learned a lot. I learned so much from working on that 58 and the origins. And, you know, you learn that Volkswagens in the 50s and the BMWs and the Mercedes are all the same, have the same parts. They just, so I don't know if you're familiar with the Mercedes 190, the sports car. Just a different shape of my car, same parts, different engine. And like, they're interchangeable, but they made like so many models of those. But it's very fascinating. And and you're working with a carbureted engine with, it's just a different paradigm. And now they're classics and the value goes up on those. And I got it for $2,000.
Oh, well, it's a really good shape. I mean, that's
original. Yeah, it's the original color, paint, and everything. Yeah. But it's like a grayish. It's a grayish color.
Grayish. Okay,
yeah.
It's still rough.
Well, I have been. It's got, like, an issue with the valve piston. I'm jacking it up to rotate the pistons. That's what you do. You move the back wheel, and you change the piston. This is a weird, this is a unique car. This is different than you would think. You can do something up front. You can rotate it there, but they recommend you do the back wheel. So have that one side jacked up, ready to go. Just got to get time to get to it. Yeah, the rear wheel. Yeah, so you don't know this unless you read it. So they have manuals online. You could look at how to operate, how to do things. And that's exactly what I did. So I have to rely on the club that I belong to for this car, different variations. So I go, you can ask questions. People ask questions all the time. How does this work? How do you do this? Because you can't, it's hard to figure out. Like, just shifting it. Shifting is not straightforward. It's a four in the tree. So first gear is up, second gear is down. Then you go out third. Then fourth is down and out. Then you pull straight back and go up or reverse. And you never know that just by figuring it out. Maybe you might figure out first, second, or whatever, but it's the reverse is really crazy. I had to watch a video of somebody driving it so I could figure out where the gears work. But once I get the engine together, I might have to get some cylinders redone or whatever because it's getting a little wobbly. But I drove that around the neighborhood to the gas station a couple of times, and then it started getting a little wobbly, and I thought something's not right. So now I got to go in. I might have to get something milled or something, but I'll have somebody do that for me. So it's not a big deal. I can do that. I was even thinking about putting a hydrogen engine in it Sunday. Think about that. Yeah. Well, I worked on a lot of stuff that, like, I had parts, you know, we had components that made their own decisions, but you had to outfox the part, you know, they're saying, hey, I'm doing this, and it's telling you something, you know, it's not true. It's just a repetition and logic. I worked on starter systems. You know, it's a small engine, so you get to know small engines. And then it runs the big engine, the big afterburner machine. So, and then that's a dangerous job. Right now, the PTO shaft, which they have in trucks, right? But on the jet engines, they spin really fast. You put your hand in there, it's gone. Your arm is gone. Yeah, it's very, you got to respect what you're doing and the dangers you're in. You got, like I said, respect the danger because you lose your life. You get sucked down an intake. You hit sharp surfaces. The radar, if you're around the radar, that's not good either. And then we have hydrogen you got to deal with. It's rocket fuel, and I got hit by that twice. And you go to the hospital. They don't have any. Nobody knows what they. There's a lot of unknowns. Nobody knows what the long-term effects are. And it's catastrophic. Anybody who smells that has to be, you know, take drawing blood and everything. But there's no conclusion. So and that's with the space shuttle hat on it. But there's, if you put that in your car, you could, it would be like a rocket, because the way that, so a friend of mine when I worked at the airline said, hey, can you give me some of the hydrazine? I said, no, I can't. I'm going to go to jail. I wouldn't even give that to anybody. You would probably kill yourself if you used it. But there's a lot of different things like that. And very complex. So the A7, I started out on that. The A7 was cool. What's that? It's instant. It's not really jet fuel. It's like rocket fuel. So what it does is it supplies instant fuel when you lose power. You'll have a separate generator. You lose your engine or power or whatever. This thing goes instantly powers everything through this little generator. And that right there will get you to wherever you need to go. You could also fly on the battery, using the aircraft battery for 10 minutes, you can control the aircraft with no power. So you get dead stick it. I know, some of the stuff, and the surfaces are really fast, really quick. It's amazing to watch. I think I might have, let's see, I want to present something there. Let's see. So, I don't know, you can't see that, can you? Let's go to the desktop. We go back here. So, I don't know. Anyway, I have. Let me grab something here. Oh, okay. Your browser has blocked your screen. Are you kidding me? Okay, that's what happened. Let me grab something else. Anyway, the A7 was so much simpler. It was built in the 60s. There's only like one relay for different things. But it did its job. It carried a lot of payload. It was armed. It was wing over the top kind of aircraft. That's what I started on. And it was an old Navy plane. Vietnam War, but that thing, you could fly that overseas, and you could island hop all the way there without a tanker. This plane, the planes today, you can't do that. You have to get a tanker to go overseas, but those guys would island hop and everything, and it was like, it felt like a tank. And all it did was attack. It was like the sister or the brother of the A-10. And it was a simple aircraft. They had a lot of electronics on it, but it was nothing like the F-16. The F-16 has pods to where, like, if you, like a charging pod, you can see like 80 miles in pitch dark. And if you look at the airfield, it looks like you're there. Everything's lit up. They see things well before they get there. So,
do you think the VA would be like VA 7
or VA 7? Attack? Attack, yeah. The spider. Sure. For dogfighting and all kinds of things.
And the C, that would be for cargo?
Yes, you got it. Yeah, cargo. Yeah, the big cargo planes and everything, yeah. The K is for tankers, for kerosene, because that's pretty much the fuel is kerosene. Pretty much. Same with airliners, they're using the kerosene type. As a matter of fact, when I worked at the airlines, they would dump the fuel. They take that, put in the tractors. I'm not sure what diesel number 2 is, but it's pretty much kerosene. Oh, okay. 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 Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because it's not as flammable as people think it is. But, you know. Yeah. One of my things I had was oxygen and liquid oxygen, liquid nitrogen, things that would make you pass out or burn pretty much. So you have to be very careful, protective equipment and everything. So it was a very dangerous job. Then you got running aircraft, you got taxiing aircraft, you got different situations, and it doesn't matter. The weather doesn't matter. You're out there in whatever weather there is, and you just have to dress to the stuff. But I enjoyed every minute of it. The most challenging thing was troubleshooting. You're the man. You're the guy out there, and your goal is to fix that aircraft because they need it for another flight. That's the whole thing. It never ends. The cycle never ends, but I enjoyed every minute. But you have to be wise. But because the smartest people can't fix airplanes, this is really weird. The smartest people can't get it done. You know what I'm talking about. It's not about, because we had some engineers as guardsmen. They could never get past that point of reading the diagram. But we just go on it. Hey, let's go see what we have. See what you got first. You know, the diagrams are fine. Take them with you, but it's a challenge. You want to be the guy that when you go out there, they know that you're going to fix it. That's who you want to be. You don't want to be the guy who theorizes anything. Get it done. Just go. Go do it. But that's what. Yes. Right. You gotta have a clue before you get there. But I remember, then you have to do that in a war game scenario. So you're there for 4 days, or you're on TDY or something. You're trying to get things going, and then they're throwing bombs, and you see smoke everywhere, and then somebody gets hit, and then you gotta play, you know, self-aid and buddy care, and then you gotta take care of those people. Then you gotta, and this is like, we go there, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning to start. We have another shift. Then the plane's still got to go, and it's generating. And it's the cycle continues. So they put you through that for training when you go to the war. You're able to generate more aircraft, the aircraft that they need. So when I was in Africa, we did 30, 12, so there were shifts. And then we had a day off once a week. But, you know, when you see people that much, your friends and all, after a while, it's like, I can't do this anymore. I got to get away. You got to get away from people because you're living with them. You're sleeping with them. You know, you guys are in the showers and you're doing laundry together. And it's like, and you go to the chow. It's like, so what I did when I was in Africa, I went to the, I play bass guitar at the Navy Chapel. So I have a different set of friends. And it was like 3 times a week, and I enjoyed it because it was like you just get away from that because it's what they would call balls to the wall. That's what you're doing. Sometimes there's a lot of dead time, but there are other times where you're constantly going. But the most magnificent thing I loved about these things was we were flying over Iraq, and it was every day or so, every other day, we had the AWACS takes off, the tankers take off, the Navy planes take off, the British, the French, their tankers go up, and all, so everybody's up in the sky, and you have command and control. So they see everything from the sky, right? They see everything. If the AWACS didn't take off, nobody left because they can't see. That's how important. So the technology, so everybody's working together. You got the Brits. The Brits are always there with us. Always. They were always where we were. And they would take orders from us. That's why I'm like, things like Ukraine and Britain, we don't belong to them. They do it. We say, we're the kingpins. We make all the decisions. We set everything up. We got the best aircraft. We got the best everything. And everything goes, you know, with the backhanded salute to our commanders. So it's interesting. We had Turkish people there, but they're separate. They're in NATO, but they're not really. The NATO countries follow our lead. It's just a different world. But you see all is like after their takeoffs for like an hour, people who are sleeping on that ship can't get any sleep because you're pretty much in the flight line. But it's constant. And then the planes come back 8 hours later. So they're all getting refueled in the air and everything, and they come back and they shut down. And then they're on alert. Folks still working there. You taxi your plane into a hardened shelter. They close the doors. So they're all, like, everybody's, like, protected, except for the big planes. They're not. They're just out in the open. But then they have to do these 35-degree takeoffs so they won't get hit by enemy fire. So it gets pretty real after a while. You're like, wait a minute. Then you have planes that break, but that's your job. Your job is to fix the planes. So you gotta take your best people. I've been up there 6 times to Turkey on that those exercises with the other units too, because I love the job. That was the best part of my job. We're doing it for real, and the pilots are going over there and doing their job. So we send the pilots to fight. No, that's a separate section. Those guys were good too. They did that. Excellent. Oh yeah. They are pros. I'm telling you right now, they are absolute pros. All these people, the avionics, that was a separate group. You had sheet metal, you had machine shop, you had everybody who could do whatever needed done. To be successful, you gotta have everything lined up. You gotta have people to take care of just the littlest things, the biggest things. They documented everything, and every skill you can imagine required for the aircraft is always there. They're in the package. They go with the aircraft, and they're always, you know, whenever something happens, those guys get egress people for the seats. They know what, people know what they're doing, the canopy, stuff like that. So all these things have the Air Force specializes, so they don't really have. Not everybody's a jack of all trades. Like in the airline world, you're supposed to be able to do everything. Nobody can learn the whole aircraft. I'll tell you right now, it's impossible. I don't care how small it is or how big it is. You'll never learn the whole thing. So they specialize. The Navy does it too. I know everything about electrical. I know everything about this, that. And so you get involved in other systems, the fuel system, you get involved in egress, you get involved in, we get air conditioning too. So it's something that was inherited because it got more complicated over the years at that aircraft that they gave it to the electrical troubleshooters, which makes sense. But, and then it's like raining on you, you know, so much. You have to remember, you got books and everything, but you get to the point where, hey, I know this plane a lot better than I used to, and so. So you go on rescue trips. I've been on a lot of those across country, you know, trying to, plane goes down, you have to send a group out to get it. Which, you know, that's a lot for every aircraft. But anyway, I talked too much about that. But I love talking about it.
Yeah,
I think we're going to
get to
right. Yeah. Well, yeah, it is what it is. It's what I did. I did that for 30 years, and you know, you get burned sometimes, and you learn from the best people, and they show you, hey, this is what you do, and this is how you repair things, and this is how you leverage your meter, a multimeter, a simple multimeter. That's your best friend sometimes, and you get to know how to use it and what measurements to take. So I learned from really, really good people. I trained really good people too. So some people won't ever get it. So that's just the way it is. People are like that. It's like driving a truck. I can never drive a truck. But if I put my mind to it, yeah. So I have a, I don't, I don't know a lot about a lot of other stuff, a lot of other things. If I want to learn it, then I will, but we still don't like the Navy, just saying. And by the way, the Army and the Air Force are the same. Did you know that? Army, Air Corps? They wear the same uniforms, exact same uniforms. In the guard world, the Army commander controls both, and then the Air Force commander takes over, controls both. So think about it. So they're originally the same. Just like the Marines and the Navy, they always together. The Marines always get on the Navy ships. So the Army and the Air Force are pretty much the same. So it blew my mind when I figured that out. So, so they never really separated. They just they have different divisions. Yeah. So anyway, I talked too much. I'll let you go. I'm gonna. Yeah, I think we have. I think they're okay now.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, the show's on right now. It's on my page. We're live. So yeah, I'm gonna anytime you wanna come back on, let me know, because I appreciate you coming on tonight. Otherwise I'll just ramble on and on. I enjoy that though. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. I understand. I do the same thing. I got it. I get it. I totally understand. I would do the same thing.
Yeah. We'll be in touch. Next time you want to get together,
Yeah, I did, but I was expecting there's another guest I was going to get in for that. But if you want to do, if you want to do that next week, we can. I'm a big fan.
Maybe
yes. Watch out, he's a ringer. He is like the ultimate old time radio guy. But we can challenge him. You can challenge him. What's your favorite show?
Well, let's see.
Too many.
I always had a callback to Johnny Bob.
Yes.
I don't know why.
Yes. It's fascinating because it's a whole ecosystem, and he gets into these situations.
Yeah.
They call him up.
The five-part one, too.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are like gold. Like, you can't wait to get to the next one. Yeah.
On my way home today, I was going to do some stretches. On my way home, I was listening to an episode of Dunstone.
Mm-hmm.
The camera just today started coming up to the house.
Yeah.
When you get started listening to one of those, it could be Dragnet, it could be the Whisper.
Yeah.
Any of those, when you start listening to it, it's kind of like yours.
I totally agree. Because you never know what's going to happen. And it's so well put, the music in it and everything, and the scenery is just beautiful. You like comedy? I like, the tavern, what about, I can't remember, it's a tavern called, I can't remember now. Oh, I can't remember. Duffy's. Yes. That's good comedy there. And they do little skits in between. It's just, the entertainment was so rich back then.
I don't know why, but I've never been able to really become really enamored with
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, maybe Jack Benny was going to go to the first down, practically.
Get some of my nerves. Yeah, I like those two. I like your hour and the newer ones. And, you know, just like the Great Gildersleeve, the culture inside of those programs, you get to see what things were like. Like the druggist was a big deal back then. And you can get your sodas there, and it's just different, a whole other world. I learned a lot. I just like learning, you know, what happened back then. Yes. Yes. I love just watching them, listening to them. Yeah, they're fantastic. Anyway, I'll let you go, sir.
Let me know.
Okay, sure.
Have a great rest of your day and the weekend coming up.
Yes, sir. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye. That's it. That's the end of the show. This is the, I think we have 32 minutes left on the Blog Talk Radio, but I'm going to end that episode. Thank you, Blog Talk listeners. Talk to you later. There it goes.